Pabrook Spears broadside.
Figure eight, and when the word came over the wire, everybody was running around, and the courthouse was on fire. All the schools are shuttered, the gutters all are cluttered, and the ghetto cop unhooks his safety catch. Boiling bubble, but I'm just gonna throw my latch, 'cause I got a nice car and troubles of my own, and I just ain't got the time. Somebody else will do it, I won't think about it, maybe it'll go away. They got a nuclear reactor on an earthquake fault, and everybody's making a scene. Volcano, but you know, thank God, that's in the Philippines. Indians dying from uranium mining, and the radiation just won't quit. They're gonna make the whole world dirty, ain't gonna be no place left dirty, ain't gonna be no place left to. But it's alright, 'cause I got a nice car and troubles of my own. Somebody else will do it, I won't think about it, maybe it'll go away. Well, I worry about money, I worry about women, I don't think it's funny, I'm sinking while I'm swimming. Too many taxes, bad, I love the sexes, demonstrations at my door. Some fella got $1,000 bid, some other fella don't got enough for bread. Somebody rich while somebody poor. Hey, but I don't think there's a real connection. Don't go digging up no collection, 'cause I'm just not absolutely sure. And anyway, I got a nice car and troubles of my own, and I just ain't got the time. Somebody else will do it, I won't think about it, maybe it'll go away. Nice car and troubles of my own, and I just ain't got the time. Somebody else will do it, I won't make them go away. Oh, somebody else will do it, I won't think about it, maybe it'll go away.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier Robert North, so called because of the gaily colored bathrobe I occasionally wear at demonstrations where they're chucking poor people out of the parks or throwing them down the road or arresting them for sleeping at night, which I think is bad news. And that's happening around here. That's happening up in San Francisco. That's happening up in Eureka. But it's apparently not going to be happening as much in Eugene, Oregon. We're going to be hearing from Eugene, Oregon tonight, today, a report on the new ordinance passed on Monday by the Eugene City Council, actually decriminalizing or even legalizing, let's say, sleeping in vehicles in industrial areas. Boy, I hope our city council wakes up and smells the snores, so to speak, or smells the basic human rights violations that are happening here in town, is, I guess, the real way of putting it. We're going to have a report first from Sacramento, Eddie Harris of the Sacramento Housing Alliance. He's an activist there who was doing demonstrations in Sacramento, has been for some time, but particularly this last week, which was Homelessness and Hunger Week. He's going to talk a little bit about that, mostly a media hype number, but he's got a report from Sacramento for those of you who are interested, and I'm going to begin with that. We're also hoping to get Donna Dice on the line of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz to give us an update. That may take a little doing, because it's going to be a surprise call for her. You're going to hear Golden Gate Park update as well up in San Francisco. And there's going to be, hopefully, some mystery callers will be calling in. It'll be a mystery, or if they call in. Actually, it won't be a mystery. It'll actually be fine. We may have an update from Salinas, from a correspondent there. And we're, of course, going to be following the main story of the day. And by the way, I hear you, caller. Your phone is ringing, but stay on the line. We'll take your call in just a moment. the main topic of the day continues to be, for me, the issues around the slaying of Happy John Dine and the DA's press conference, which came out with essentially no new information except the name of the one witness who corroborates, or actually who, I'm not even sure there's a corroborating witness, but who says that Dine pointed a weapon, Dine was threatening, Dine had even had a weapon in his hand. So we're going to talk about all that. First, we're going to go to the phones for a brief discussion, or we'll see what's happening here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, it's V-Man. I was wondering, could you back up a little bit to that part about the media hype again that you were talking about a couple minutes ago, the guy from Sacramento?
Oh, by the media hype, I mean there's a sort of a national event called National Hunger and Homelessness Week, in which a lot of organizations participate. You know, mayors make sympathetic statements. Social service organizations do soup drives. I mean, it's not that it's a bad thing to do, but it's sort of a symbolic once a year, kind of like Christmas, and everybody gives a gift and says, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if, and then the next day it's business as usual.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure
what
you meant there, because I thought you were, like, making somebody out to be somewhat of a media whore or something. I just wanted to make sure that...
No, nothing like that.
Okay, just check it.
Sure, no problem.
Bye.
Thanks, Vinny.
So, yeah, no, there definitely are media whores around. Perhaps who knows who they are, but, well, we are media here, and we're trying to get the story out, and I definitely am interested in the media getting the story out on John Dine. If I have to prostitute myself to do it, I don't know how far I'd go, but I think the story should get out. The truth has got to get out on the issue of did all the... what actually happened there on the corner of Front and Soquel Street on Wednesday night, and why aren't the witnesses who disagreed, who, and again, that seems to be the majority of witnesses still. That's still the majority of witnesses I've spoken to. In fact, no witness I've spoken to has said that Happy John had a weapon in his hand. And these lines are open. Ben Newman, bouncer at the Catalyst, a primary witness who supports the police account. I guess the man in the back of the squad car who originally even filed the complaint. Please feel free to call in and give your account, clear the air, tell us what you saw. Maybe you can give us some information that we don't have now. But right now, the witnesses that we've spoken to, the witness on the roof of the New Leaf, Alani Ballowager, the two witnesses in the car, Mike Schultz and Stacy Buckaloo, the witness on the corner, Tom Murphy, and other witnesses who arrived on the scene shortly after, give quite a different account of what was going on than the official account, and we need to know the truth in this issue. But let's turn for a different truth and for a breath of Sacramento air to what's going on in Sacramento. Conversation with Eddie Harris, recorded last night.
Homeward, the Sacramento newspaper, which is sold by folks on the streets, as well as you're also a member of what organization, Eddie?
Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee.
And so you've been kind of organizing around our state capitol there. First of all, can you give us sort of the brief description of how is the situation for homeless people in Sacramento? Is there? I know when we were when we got together in Sacramento, which has sort of a yearly homelessness and housing conference, we began a march to the riverbank 3 or 4 years ago to protect and defend the rights of homeless people who were being harassed by the police. We formed the Sacramento Union of the Homeless, and since that's kind of dispersed, but what? Give us the update.
As of now, there isn't a whole lot of homeless unity here. But
there's not much homeless unity, or there's not much homeless action? Is there a lot of division?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Not a whole lot of action. We don't have a whole lot of demonstrations.
Is that because people are divided and they're factions, or because they're just not into demonstrations or not organized?
Probably both. Uh-huh. Because at our rally and vigil for both days, the basic times were 12 and noon both days. And
you had a rally and vigil? Tell us about that.
Yeah, altogether, not more than 100 persons showed up.
Which is a small turnout for Sacramento homeless people? Or?
Yeah, very small turnout. What is usual is to be expected.
And what, this is what, Homelessness and Hunger Week or something?
Yeah, National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week.
I see. And so how widely publicized was it a camp out?
I wanted it to be a camp out, but I got word that the sheriffs and the highway patrol here were on to us. Because I had, in the original permit, I had put that we were going to have tents and sleeping bags and we were going to camp out and all that and food.
Uh-huh.
I denied.
Right.
So we submitted another one without all that stuff and it got approved.
And so you didn't camp out, eh?
No.
Actually,
we wanted to, but after we left the site on Thursday, which was about 3:30, we went over to the county administration building.
Uh-huh.
In an attempt to, we was going to camp out there, but we decided not to. So we saw Dan Delaney there, who was one of the creators of Loaves and Fishes, and he suggested we go up and speak with the water supervisors.
Did you?
And we went up to the office, and we only got to speak with one of the representatives. Roger Dickinson's assistants.
Mm-hmm. And how did that go?
Yeah, it was okay. Well, it was nothing to it. You know, he couldn't tell us a whole lot. You know, we just wanted to make some noise.
Now, it's not really true that you didn't camp out. What you mean to say is you didn't camp out together in public. I imagine a lot of people who were homeless camp out every night in the sense that they sleep outdoors, right?
Yeah.
I guess we wouldn't really call it camping weenie roast style.
Yeah.
In essence, what happened is because people won't get together and join each other and camp together in public protest, they get picked off one by one or they have to kind of huddle in fear wherever they go.
Exactly.
Is that accurate or am I being too melodramatic?
No, that's exactly the way it is. And so, So we were going down the line on the sheet, right? An information sheet. We wanted to speak with the next assistant of one of our board of supervisors. So 10 minutes after this guy left, the sheriff comes up and says, "Hey, y'all have to leave."
And what did you do?
We left.
I say, how many were you?
There was five of us. And I had laid my sleeping bag out on the floor, laid on it.
I see. So nobody really wanted to go for the bus, did you?
No.
Was it a public building?
Maybe we should have, because he said we had to leave because we were not on official business. Which we were.
Well, I think that if the building is open to the public, you have a right to be there, but police officers will often tell you things that aren't entirely true in an attempt to press on with their objectives, which in their mind is maintaining the public order, which, of course, is following the orders of the public officials, so...
Mm-hmm.
It's a sad old story. So today you're going to go over there and you're going to camp out anyway, right?
No, not today, no.
So,
Today is Saturday.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I feel that we have a little ball rolling now, so we ought to make things happen. And I do intend to complain about that incident.
Good. Well, if you're treated abusively or inappropriately by police, I've always recommend you complain. I know I filed a commendation on a police officer yesterday.
Pulled one.
He didn't do any, he wasn't, you know, I mean, it's not like he's the most wonderful guy in the world, but he actually pulled me over and he told me my lights weren't on and he could have, you know, hassled me big time, and instead he chose to be courteous and correct.
Hey.
And I said, "Fine, thank you." And then I called his superior and I said, "Kick this guy off the force. He's a little too nice." You know, sort of.
What else is going on here? City and county, they approved that CDBG plan, and we consolidated plan.
Have the police been shooting any of your homeless people down in the streets like is happening here? We have a man, Happy John Dine, who was shot down week ago, and they've just officially come out this morning with the word that it was justified because they claimed to have a witness who saw him with a weapon in his hand, even though six other witnesses say he had nothing in his hands and that wasn't threatening and certainly wasn't pointing a weapon at the police officer, as the district attorney's office and the police chief have said. Any police activity in Sacramento we should know about?
Nothing specifically, except they chopped this tree down a couple of months ago that a lot of people used to hang out under.
What was it called?
It was just a tree in between the Mission and Loaves and Fishes.
Now, Loaves and Fishes, of course, we know has been feeding the homeless people, what, in the park? Is that right? Or is that what they were doing? Were they feeding indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
They've been feeding indoors, which usually doesn't create any problems. When they go after Food Not Bombs, when authorities attempt to close down groups like Food Not Bombs, who feed the homeless, it's usually because they're outdoors, downtown, in areas that make it very clear that there is a bunch of people who are hungry every day and aren't being taken care of and aren't particularly photogenic either. But in your case, in Sacramento, you had loaves and fishes feeding indoors, and they still tried to shut down loaves and fishes on Sunday, of all things. Is that
right,
correct?
Sunday they give out bag lunches.
Right, but weren't they trying to shut loaves and fishes down from doing that?
Right, on Sundays, yeah.
And did they succeed or not?
No, they did not succeed. It went into mediation because the city council voted to sue loaves and fishes.
The city council was going to sue loaves and fishes for giving out peanut butter sandwiches, right?
Yeah.
Pretty exciting stuff.
And there were several other things. But they had a mediator, and loaves and fishes came out better than they were.
Really?
Yeah.
So what about your newspaper, Homeward? How can folks get a copy of it if they want a copy?
They can call Stacy at the Sacramento Housing Alliance. That phone number is 916-442-1198.
And how about if they want to write you? You got an address for your paper?
Yeah, it's 2125 19th Street.
2125 19th Street, Sacramento, California.
95814.
95814. So for all you homeless newspaper buffs or street newspaper buffs, you can write Homeward, get a copy of Homeward, or try to track me down at 423-4833, and you can look at some of our back issues. If you send us the current issues, by the way, Eddie, we are completely out. I mean, I think we got the first three issues of Homeward, and that was that.
Okay, I'll try.
Well, listen, thank you.
Let me tell you about the overflow situation.
Sure, sure, please. Take some
time. You know, we usually have the winter overflow shelter, usually began in the middle of November and ended at the end of March.
That's sort of the armory?
At the Cal Expo.
That's not the armory, so it's a...
Like an armory, yeah.
Is it under the direction?
Like a dormitory style thing.
Is it under the direction of the military like it is in other places, or...?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
And so, city, county, they figure there's no money for it.
Oh, really?
Because some money that was put for that went to other places, went to the new detox facility, things like that. So they're saying they're not going to open it, and we're making a big noise about it, which was one of the reasons for the rally and vigil.
How many shelter spaces are there, say, for tonight for homeless people in Sacramento?
$580, something like that.
And how many homeless people would you estimate there are in the Sacramento area?
They say there's like 3,500.
So there's place for about a seventh, right?
Yeah.
Where do the rest of them go?
Living on the streets, the river, living with family.
Is there a law in Sacramento or a police policy that makes it illegal for people to sleep in their vehicles or somewhere like outside but not indoors?
Yes, there is the so-called Ain't I Camping Ordinance.
And is that a recent law?
95.
Is it being vigorously enforced?
The police have been coming around and citing people for sleeping on the streets, but
And is there any legal group?
Those tickets are the citations are usually thrown out by the judge.
Why so?
These people just need to show up.
Why does the judge throw out the citations?
Because we have an attorney that takes care of them, Mr. Stuart Katz, and
what kind of a defense does he use?
Probably that the ordinance is unconstitutional.
Well, if he found that, one would think that the police could not even bring in more people under the ordinance. Have you ever been to one of these hearings?
Police hearings?
Well, no, a hearing in court for one of the people.
No, I haven't.
If you do, please give us a report, because we'd like to hear how that's going. At least I'd like to hear how that's going.
And that was Eddie Harris of the Sacramento Street newspaper Homeward. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. In Santa Cruz, this is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor. And our call-in number, in case you want to join the conversation, is 423-5361, 423-5361. We're going to be discussing a number of subjects. I'm going to be reading from the Register Pajaronian account of the District Attorney's press conference on Friday, which seems to give the final seal of approval to the official story, which is that Happy John Dine was shot dead by Officer Connor Carey because he pointed a toy gun at the officer in a combat stance, leading the officer to believe he had a real weapon, and so the officer fired in self-defense. That's the official story. And we're also going to be going on shortly to San Francisco demonstration against the harassment, sweeps, and destruction of property of the homeless in Golden Gate Park and around the Hate. But first, let's see what you are saying out there.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, on the John Dine killing, did you notice the report?
John Dine, actually.
John Dine. The Sentinel this week had mentioned the autopsy report confirmed that he could not have been taking a combat stance. It was listed in the back page of the article, way towards, I think it was like the third to last paragraph in the article. A lot of people might not have caught that little tidbit, but I thought it was kind of something that should be brought up since that's what the witnesses were on Free Radio kept saying for so long, is that the guy had his arms down on his sides. And
now what exactly?
I read the Metro report where they said that you had some problems with it, and of course nobody else did, and that witnesses had confirmed that he took a combat stance. And now the autopsy has confirmed that he could not have been in a combat stance due to the angle in which the bullets entered his body.
Now, can you elaborate on that? Because that's something that I've missed so far.
Yeah, it's in the Sentinel article from yesterday on the back page, the autopsy report.
Yeah, I can find that article.
I don't know how to elaborate on that, but they can tell when you've been shot. They can tell by the way the angle the bullets went into you what position your muscles were in. They can tell if your hands were above your head. They can tell if your hands were at your side. They can tell if you were taking a combat stance, too.
So do you have the article before you?
I do not.
Well, if anybody out there has the article before them, maybe they can call in and read that section. I have the Pajaronian article. Unfortunately, I do not have the Sentinel article with me.
I'll see if I can dig it up. I'll call back.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
And that's... That's the kind of teamwork we need here to really get in touch with the issues, and I hope that's the kind of information that's going to be coming in over the next few days. The DA's office claims to have interviewed over 30 witnesses, of which I only know at least 10 witnesses that I've heard of that were witness to the shooting. Now, they interviewed me, and I wasn't a witness, so maybe they're talking about everybody in town that knew somebody who knew somebody. I don't know.
Highlights from it.
Okay.
It says Danner dismissed those allegations. The allegations.
Now, first of all, this is an article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel of Friday, November 21st.
Saturday,
November 22nd.
Yeah, front page article and then back page. They do their front page articles continued on the back page a lot.
Uh-huh.
Danner dismissed the allegations. That several witnesses corroborated over, but he said that several witnesses corroborated Carey's over stories. Danner's still saying several witnesses rather than one. The department's, then it goes to another area, the department's internal investigation is not complete. That's according to Locke, that's the assistant police chief.
Mm-hmm.
But the department is still investigating whether Carey violated police procedures when he pulled his 9mm semi-automatic handgun and fired it at Dine. So that's something that's interesting. The Citizens Police Review Board, meanwhile, has said it will look into whether it will ask the city manager or the city council to launch an unprecedented independent investigation. That will be December 8th, Citizens Police Review Board. Now, here's something that your previous caller was talking about. The bouncer said Dine took a combat stance, according to investigators Carey and Over and other witnesses. However, did not mention a combat stance. Instead, they said Dine brought the real-looking weapon into a firing position, according to Danner. The autopsy report verifies that version and not the combat stance, because of the angle of the two bullets carry fired into Dine's lower abdomen and his head.
I see.
So this is a further refinement of the cover-up. With, you know, when they find themselves conflicting with the autopsy, they have to drop certain things. I think the bouncer has been overprotective of his high school buddy and come up with as much story as he could to make it sound good, and now it's backfired on them with the autopsy. Three witnesses, according to the newspaper, all have disputed at least part of the official version of events. All have said they did not see Dine holding anything when he was shot. So I would say basically that Bob Gammon has backed down quite a bit from his cover-up cooperation and is acknowledging dispute. And points out a couple things. You know, the autopsy discrepancy, the the Citizens Police Review Board call for an independent investigator, and the department's internal affairs itself saying that there may be proper violation of proper use, proper procedure. So that's the highlights of that story.
Well, let me comment on that, David, and get your reaction to my thoughts.
Sure.
I mean,
I'm trying to save my breath here. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm pleased that this autopsy's comment appears. I'm kind of pleased that he mentions the names of three witnesses at the very, very end of the article. But, you know, the real news, I think, is that unless he has interviewed witnesses that persuade him that the police story was correct, it's surprising to me that he does not at least give some sort of significant coverage to the demonstration and to the alternate stories, which he has not done. All he's done is he's written them off with a kind of a two or three lines. I also want to comment on Bob Gammon. I spoke to him at the rally. He was kind of, you're going to be hearing the interaction that Bob Gammon had with several of the speakers, including Becky Johnson, who denounced him by name and denounced the Sentinel, and I think quite properly so. He apparently is going to be retiring next week and moving to a Richmond paper because of a family situation. His mother needs to be taken care of. She's ill, he's told me. But you know, I'm finding Bob Gammon not terribly kind of credible person to me. He doesn't seem to come through in his promises. For example, he told me, as I understand it, he was going to come to the video showing of the witness's testimony afterward, and he didn't. And he also said he was going to put some comments in the paper. I think I made a comment about toy justice, which he was kept telling me, oh, that's a great comment. That's going into my story. You know, it's not that I want to be the big egotist, but he also had several different stories for witness Tom Murphy as to why he wouldn't cover him. First, he claimed that Murphy insisted the whole story be written verbatim, which Murphy never told us. Murphy, then he claimed that his editor had cut it. Finally, he claimed that he had decided not to run it. Murphy, as those of you who may not know or are listening, is the witness who was on the corner, says he was on the corner really within, I guess, 20 or 30 feet, maybe a little further down, where Front and Soquel Streets, on the same side of the street where John Dine was shot that evening, that Wednesday night. So I don't know what I'm glad you're taking a positive view of Bob. I think that it sounds like they're doing their usual cover-up.
Well, compared to his original article with a negative color, instant, you know, immediate negative coloration of John Dine, you know, and trying to make him out to be other than he was, I think it's somewhat of a
Are there any negative comments about Dine?
No, there aren't any negative comments.
Well, that's something, I guess.
And there's an acknowledgement that there's other witnesses. The thing is, then he just simply quotes Danner saying, you know, witnesses, you know, corroborate. When actually, we still seem to only have one proof that only one witness, the bring-along witness, is the only one corroborating. And you might say he over-corroborated. Now they're having to back down, and the police are disagreeing with him, too.
Yeah, because I mean, it sounds, if you may remember, if you heard my last show, perhaps you didn't, but Stacey Buckaloo, who gave a press conference on Monday, stating that she disagreed with the conclusions of the district attorney's office and felt that all the witnesses were not being heard, or at least that what she saw was different than what the DA and the police chief were reporting. No weapon in his hand, nothing pointed, no combat stance, no hostility.
Let me finish.
And at that time, she spoke to Alan Johnson, a district attorney. I also was present for some of the conversation. And Johnson, she says, told her that they are now finding that witness is not credible in terms of his claims that there was a combat stance and that there was a weapon pointed. And Alan Johnson, according to Stacey Buckaloo, and I checked this out later, went so far as to say that even the police officers are now claiming a different story. So it's really very unclear what actually happened and what witnesses are actually supporting this official story. I mean, I don't understand why the police department and the district attorney's office cannot take a longer period of time, admit that there's contradictions and inconsistencies in the stories, and they have to really weigh everything. But since they aren't, and this, I guess, is what's really been troubling me, I think we have to take this a step further ourselves.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, as much as the Danner can claim the official into the investigation, it's quite obvious the investigation is still going on. I think what Stacey Bekele represents is the university looking down at the city and being shocked and really quite dismayed at how unprofessional and undemocratic and un-American the cover-up has proceeded. And I think that, you know, she is an ideal representation of students that come to this town thinking that, you know, we live in a progressive community where the police worked to our benefit. Now, I'm not indicting all police. There certainly are some great cops out there that are really trying to keep the peace, and, you know, I hate for them to be taking the fall for the police chief and Art Danner. But, you know, Art Danner and police chief are really political personalities that are trying to keep their fiefdoms in order. And that's one of the things wrong with this entire county, is it's run like a bunch of, the departments are run like fiefdoms. And there's really, when you look at this county closely, there's really a lot of corruption. So to see Art Danner acting in a corrupt manner should not be surprising to anybody who's been here for a while or ever been on a contract negotiating team with the thieves that are stealing from the county employees' health plan and on and on. It just goes on endlessly. It's a pretty corrupt little county, student, so I'm sorry you have to get used to it, but let's all get together and let's try to fix it. I'll sign off now.
Thank you, David.
Sure, bye.
Yeah, that was David Silva, Green Party candidate at the last city council election, who is also himself suing the police department, I think suing a city council member, and suing the city for damages incurred on a police assault on him when he was thrown into a pillar at a sleeping van demonstration, which he wasn't even a part. He was simply trying to present petitions which had fallen to the floor to the city attorney that he simply felt he had to do, and he was then thrown out the door. David is an HIV-positive man who nonetheless does more than five other people, including myself. Well, perhaps three other people, if you want to include myself. Anyway, here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
John Dine's body lies a-moldering in the grave.
Aha, I think that we're talking to another critic of the district attorney. That sounds like Bob LaMonica.
It is, and of
Hi,
course
Bob.
That preceding statement assumes that the body's left the coroner's office by now. I was going to do a couple of quotes from the Sentinel article of 11/22, which I think are interesting. From Mr. Danner, quote, "It is our legal judgment that given all the circumstances in the case and considering all the witnesses' statements that the officer's actions were legally justified." And then the following paragraph says, "Santa Cruz police officials immediately praised the district attorney's inquiry." Okay, I think it's important that this 16-hour later summary judgment went down in such a situation as this. And I think the biggest mistake that Steve Belcher made was lining up with Art Danner on this issue.
Steve Belcher, of course, is police chief, and Art Danner is our district attorney.
Right. It's incredible. 16 hours later, summary judgment, slam dunk, end of story, onto the next puff piece. And I wonder where, you know, I heard on a different radio station, there's a local Agenda 21, right? Jeannie Nordland is heading up this local Agenda 21, and she was mentioning this phrase, key opinion leaders, that were interviewed for the local Agenda 21. Now, where are the key opinion leaders on this issue? Where are the so-called Santa Cruz key opinion leaders? I haven't heard from too many key opinion leaders stepping forth, making any comments publicly on this issue.
Well, some of the key opinion leaders will be at City Council Tuesday night at 7 o'clock when Celia Scott becomes mayor. Celia Scott is certainly a key opinion maker. Maybe she can raise her voice on the issue, at least to demand a fair and independent investigation. I'd love to see that happen. Also, I find it interesting that the Sentinel, in fact, almost every other newspaper, too, that I've been following, although I haven't been following the Pajaronian too closely, and I'm going to read that story from the Pajaronian for folks who haven't heard it. It's not terribly exciting, but I just want to kind of clear up the record there. Sentinel has published no letters about the John Dine killing whatsoever, and we are now 10 days past the killing. Seems clear to me that they are, shall we say, selecting stuff to print And I think that it's important that people not stop flooding the phone lines, not stop writing the letters, not stop calling the Citizens Police Review Board and demanding an independent investigation. But more important even than that, although I think those things are important, as well as calling talk shows, like you suggest, KSCO has regular talk shows at 479-1080, I think is their call-in number. You can also look around for resources, because we really are going to need to conduct our own independent investigation. To do that requires hiring an investigator and some attorneys and really getting some professional to look into this, and hopefully getting this thing looked at by a DA in another county, like Terrence Hallinan, who hasn't pleased me too much with his attacks on the homeless in Golden Gate Park. He's jumped on that bandwagon pretty quickly, but I think that almost anybody would be better than Art Danner, I'm afraid, in this situation.
Let's remember that the dead guy can't testify.
Correct.
Okay, and it is not anti-cop, any of this stuff, to call into question the actions that were taken by the officers at the scene.
Right.
It is very, very obvious to indicate why didn't they call out to the guy with their megaphone? Why didn't they get behind their car doors and raise their guns if they perceived a threat? Why didn't they call for backup? These are honest, sincere questions that cannot be sloughed off with a 16-hour later summary judgment. Now, I ask, I think it's interesting, what would have happened that night? Either Steve Belcher called Art Danner the night of the killing, or Art Danner called Steve Belcher. And this situation was, for all practical purposes, lined up the following morning. 16 hours later, summary judgment, Art Danner, of all people,
and then another question,
a spokesperson on an abuse of power issue in Santa Cruz County, and I agree with David Silva. Anybody in this county that wants to be honest, and I where are these key opinion leaders when it gets down to recognizing and responding to abuse of power in regards to their district attorney?
Well, another question that comes to my mind is why didn't Marty Over, who had been on the mall for months, and actually why didn't Officer Carey, who had been on the mall for 6 weeks, why didn't they recognize Happy John? He's a very distinctive figure. It was, the area was lit. They could see a weapon in his hand pointed at them, but they didn't recognize the figure that it belonged to. You know, Gosh, they knew he had a toy gun. Certainly, I don't have any specific evidence that Over knew it, but many people knew it. And, you know, they've known that his behavior was, you know, kind of freewheeling and not aggressive, but, you know, just sort of wild and kind of crazy, you know, in his own way, happy. Why didn't Officer Over say, that's Happy? Wait a minute here. You know, why did they shoot him?
It's important to keep the heat on this issue. One other quote here from the 11/22/97 Sentinel article, and this whole combat stance thing, the story is unraveling, okay, but the intimidation factor, most people, shamefully, it's shameful to say, most people are intimidated, they prefer to look the other way. I've heard statements in regards to Mr. Danner's documented track record of abuse of power. Well, let's let him finish out his term. Now, that's a bold, courageous thing to do, which is to say that we're just going to slough it off because we don't want to deal with it. We don't want to deal with the obvious. We just want to slough it off, move on to the next puff piece. Let the guy finish out his term. I think it is incomprehensible in this situation, an abuse of power situation, that Art Danner becomes the public spokesperson for a slam dunk summary judgment. What I was going to read here was about the autopsy report. Now, of course, the police and the DAs have all the coroner's reports. They have everything. They have all the recorded testimony of witnesses. And it says here, the autopsy report verifies that version and not the, quote, combat stance because of the angle of the two bullets Carey fired into Dine's lower abdomen, Danner said. Now, the combat stance was a big deal when this thing first broke, right?
Right.
It was one of their key factors as to why this shooting was justified. So let's keep the heat on this thing, and let's hope that these so-called key opinion leaders show the courage that they're supposed to show
and one place to
and
keep
come
it.
Forward and make a public statement and demand that there be justice.
Right. Well,
full disclosure, as it's called. I'm sorry, Robert.
No, that's okay. I see you're, you know, you feel strongly about it, as you should. The citizens, the Santa Cruzans, for full disclosure, is going to meet tomorrow, for anyone interested, at 7 o'clock at 263 Water Street, which is the house right near the jail, right as you come across the bridge heading up toward Capitola from downtown. It's on your left, and it's right in back there. So if you're interested in joining this campaign to really make sure that an independent investigation happens and the truth comes out, and we do need, you know, we're going to need funding to buy the autopsy report, to buy the district attorney's investigation in terms of the report, to find out, to buy the police report. All these things are going to be expensive. Somebody's got to step forward. Somebody's got to find attorneys to help us with this. It's not going to happen unless you and others out there, and I don't just mean you, Bob, I mean everybody, you know, does something to help. But do come tomorrow at 7, and do come on Tuesday, the day after at 7, to City Council. And if you can't come, or just in addition to coming, give a call to 429-3550. That's the City Council 24-hour number. And ask to talk to any council member. Leave a message for them. Tell them you want them to look into this, to get a public investigation of this going with public hearings, to make these documents available to the public, including the police report, the autopsy report, and all the other reports. It certainly seems a small thing to ask and so important a case.
Last thing I'll say, I feel sorry, and I think everybody does across the board, including for the officers involved in this situation. It must be very harrowing for Mr. Curry to deal with this. He'll be dealing with this for the rest of his life, all right? But the fact remains is that John Dine is not expendable. And the fact remains is that police officers are human beings also, and they can make mistakes, and they must be held accountable. Otherwise, we are entering the darkest phase of the beginning of a police state.
Thank you, Bob.
And I hate to use those strong terms.
Well, you should use the terms you think are appropriate.
Okay, and one last thing here. The CPRB, I don't have too much faith in them. From what I understand, they were literally fawning over Mr. Danner at their last meeting.
Yes.
So I would assume that they're going to play circle the wagons, and they're going to stonewall this issue. They're going to rubber stamp whatever comes down from above. It's shameful. Where are the key opinion leaders? Robert, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Your call in number is 423-5361. Your number to reach me off air at some other time is 423-4833-423-HUFF. If you have any information about this case or you want to help assist this group, Santa Cruzans, for full disclosure. Do give a call also to 429-3550, which is the number of the City Council. Day or night, they will take your message there, and hopefully pay some attention to it, though don't hold your breath. I think that the reason it's important to have a public hearing, even through the CPRB, is it's another forum for people to make it real clear that the issue isn't going away. But we can't wait for them to hold forums. We have to hold our own, and that's exactly what happened on Friday, when several groups got together to express their loud, vocal, and articulate concern about both the upcoming potential execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the issue of police violence generally, and, of course, this particular case, the John Dine case. And here I was at the demonstration. You get to hear a few clips from on-the-scene speeches and the kinds of interactions that happened.
The demonstration is coming up the street here. Pictures of Mumia and signs about, it looks like a lot of Mumia signs. Somebody is daring to walk their dog on Pacific Avenue. Shocking, shocking.
Hey, he's walking for peace.
Would you like to give away some flyers? Give them away. And it looks like this hearty group of protesters.
Everybody!
Give out some flyers.
Sure. I want more flyers.
About they're passing by and the death penalty. Stolen lives. You want to give out some flyers?
Sure.
Give out some flyers. Give people on the street.
Thanks.
Yeah. Except for the petition. Oh! Sorry. And here's some for you to pass on. Looks like about 20 or 30, 40 or 50 people still walking in the protest. Tell us, tell us. And there's sort of a light rain happening as the folks pass through the metro. First alarm rolling right behind them, observing, as well as some other trucks. And I'm going to put some money in my meter. And we're all in front of Coast Federal.
Crying because of all the injustices that has happened over the years. People on this planet, it's time for us to pull it together. If not, the future looks very bleak. Prima Mia, free all political prisoners. Becky Johnson has something to say.
Yeah, I have to excuse me. My voice is pretty bad. I've had that ubiquitous flu that's going around. I want to talk a little bit about the media distortion of what's going on. Right behind us, standing by the telephone pole, is Bob Gammon from the Sentinel. Let me read some of the things he wrote in his article about this case. Gammon painted a harsh picture of Happy John as angry, having a dark side, a man with a history of violent behavior. His characterization of Officer Carey, however, the killer of Dime, is described as a 9-year veteran, conscientious, very personable, very dedicated, an avid surfer, and a real solid person. Do you want to say something, Bob? You can come up here and I'll give you the microphone.
Come on, Bob.
Come on, Bob, damn it. Come on, you've been distorting this
story. I can tell you right now, those are all descriptions given to me by people who knew both people.
And you also interviewed Stacy Buckaloo at the scene. You interviewed Mike Schmidt. Both of them told you that Happy John was not in a threatening manner. He was not in a combat pose. His hands were empty and he was not pointing anything. You also interviewed Alani Balawager, who was an eyewitness to the scene. What does that have to do with the price of beans, Bob Gammon? I'll tell you what it has to do. Your job security at the Sentinel. You have engaged in a police cover-up.
You got all those descriptions of people who knew John, I knew John, and John was a great person. John never had anything bad to say about anybody. He always, said was happy, happy. He was just...
When you cover up, your hands to you.
Come on, Bob.
That is, to me, that is complicity in a murder after the fact.
People look to the Sentinel.
Come on, Bob.
We rely on the Fourth Estate. The Fourth Estate has a severe, serious responsibility to be the watchdog for police departments and district attorneys. And your role in this, Bob Gammon, has been to parrot what District Attorney Art Danner has said, what Police Chief Steve Belcher has said, when you know better because you personally interviewed
what they said. I reported what they said, and I reported what the witnesses said. Those are all in the stories. If you go back and look at them, they're all there. No, I'm an employee of the Sentinel. I cannot speak on these issues like that.
Come and tell all these people why you think that... Did you interview the person in the police car, the ride-along witness? Why did you report what he said? How reliable is he when we don't even know his name?
That's up to you to decide.
It's on your head.
It's not just Bob Gammon. It's also the Metro. The Metro, who didn't even discuss this issue, other than to smear Robert Norris.
What about the Mercury and what about the Chronicle? Look at their articles, too.
The Mercury, the Chronicle, how about all of the television news reporters that came out and they reported initially that he had a gun in his hand, 3 hours after the police already knew it was a toy gun, and they didn't find it in his hand. No, not one of the witnesses that we've interviewed. We've interviewed 6 eyewitnesses to the actual shooting, and 3 witnesses to what the events that happened immediately after the shooting. Witnesses who reported, and Bob didn't write any of this in his article either, I might add. These 3 eyewitnesses reported that immediately after the shooting, no CPR was given. The police went over to Happy John's body and did a strip search, according to Clinton Hannes.
Yeah.
Who was an eyewitness to the events immediately after the shooting.
Why wasn't that in the
paper? They searched through his body, they flipped him over, they turned him around, and two witnesses, Clinton Hannes and Mike Schmidt, reported that they saw that they took something and threw it down on the ground. Bob Gammon didn't report that either, I might add, and he probably won't tomorrow. Oh, no one told
you. You gotta ask!
What kind of reporter are you, Bob Gammon? You call that investigative journalism? You know, you investigate with the police.
Without asking questions, but write an article? What the hell is that?
You know, you investigate the statement issued by the police? Is that the extent of your investigative reporting?
How about a question and answer?
It's not too late to report the truth. It's never too late.
I am absolutely convinced that there is a cover-up in this case, because at the press conference, which I was fortunate enough to attend, Police Chief Belcher reported that two witnesses, one of which we know was the ride-along witness in the back seat of the police car, who went to junior high school with Officer Connor Carey, who was, other reports say that they were best buddies, and that he went out drinking with Martin Over. They were, you know, drinking buddies with Martin Over, surfing buddies with Connor Carey. You know, is this... This is the witness, the star witness, the nameless star witness, supposedly the bouncer at the Catalyst. That's another thing. We have a report that the bouncer at the Catalyst claims he never knew Happy John. How believable is that? That a bouncer who'd worked for 4 years at the Catalyst, whose job is to kind of drive the undesirables away from the front of the Catalyst... Didn't know who Happy John was?
A man who's been around the Catalyst and around that area many
times. Say his name again, Hilda. Say his name again.
Well, we still have not determined the name of the bouncer at the Catalyst.
That's part of the investigation.
His
name is Ben.
I don't know what to tell you people. We're having a... You know, you don't have to believe me. You can come and see the videotapes of the eyewitnesses. We're showing that this afternoon at Loudon Nelson. What was it, 3:30?
3:30. You're invited, Bob.
3:30 at Loudon Nelson. We will have videotapes available of interviews conducted with, I think, 5 eyewitnesses. And then we'll have audio tapes of some more eyewitnesses for you to listen to. Listen to what the eyewitnesses say. We don't even know who these two eyewitness reports that the police are quoting from. We don't know who those two people are, other than one's the ride-along witness in the back of the car, and perhaps the other is Officer Martin Over. If it's somebody else, you know, I would very much be interested in speaking to that person to get their version of events. But I have been unable to find a single eyewitness that corroborates anything, the story that the police have told.
Because it's not true.
Now, I am very, very upset at the behavior of Connor Carey. I knew Happy John personally. I considered him a very peaceful person and seemingly harmless. If he had a history of violent behavior, Bob Gammon, you know, if you poke someone with a sharp stick long enough, you'll see a violent behavior. And we have lots of reports that Happy was constantly harassed by the police officers on the street. He was not well liked by the merchants in downtown. You know, he was just too colorful for them. And he didn't buy enough knickknacks, apparently. That was his biggest crime, as far as I can tell. You know, and to say, you know, and in the Metro article, to say that that Robert Norris is, you know, disrespectful of the memory of John Dine, how about Bob Gammon? Talk about disrespectful to the memory of John Dine.
Come on, Bob.
Becky Jones. Becky Jones.
For a second.
Yeah, talk from your heart, Bob.
Let's hear some truth. Let's hear Bob.
Will you speak, Bob? Will you speak?
Why are you disrespecting my friend?
I think that people should take a look at these orange signs
they're the stolen lives. I'm not going to just hammer on one.
This is David
Dumars
speaking
no
at a rally on Friday against the police
violence. What I'd like to point out is that for the police to be able to get away with murder and police brutality, it requires the cooperation of a variety of people and a variety of institutions. And in literally each one of these cases, Malice Green, Happy John, Johnny Gamage, some of them pretty well known, the various press, the established press, the TV in the various areas in which these things occurred, and the principal news outlets, which incidentally tend to be very strongly monopolized.
New York Times.
Usually these various so-called independent outlets are owned by larger interests, the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Gannett interests, or there's a variety of them. But in each and every one of these cases, the press has actively and consciously cooperated with the police. You might as well call the principal press in this country the Ministry of Information for the regime, because that is the role that they have played. This is a crucial battlefront if you want to change this. This is a crucial battlefront. Up in Roanoke Park, an electrical engineer by the name of Kao went out to celebrate. He was an Asian fellow, Chinese fellow. He was very, very loyal, very loyal. I mean, he would be the first one to tell you that if you have a problem, call the police. And he went out to celebrate at a bar his raise. He got a raise. In the bar, some cowboy, or, you know, doesn't have to be a cowboy, but somebody confronted him with a variety of slurs against Asian people. He got very upset. He went home. He was drunk. He was in the driveway of his house, and he was angry and making a lot of noise and whatnot. The cops showed up, shot him. His wife and his family came running out of the house. His wife is a registered nurse. The police prevented her from giving him any medical aid whatsoever, and he bled to death right there on the street. Now, in Santa Rosa and in Sonoma County, what the press has been saying is that, well, he was Asian, so he was a Bruce Lee karate expert. Okay? A Bruce Lee kind of karate expert. It's like, no. What it is it's a, what you call, a racial stereotype. Okay? Now, they use these kinds of things in each and every one of the situations. We need to get to the bottom of this, not because we want to know whether or not Happy John was murdered, or Malice Green, or Johnny Gamage, or Anthony Rosario, or Hilton Vega. It's because we need to nail the culprits to the wall. That's what we need to do, and we need to do it in a very, very large way. Today has been a very positive and a very powerful first step, but it is only the first step on a long, long journey. There are other individuals and other kinds of groupings of people that also cooperate. In New York City, Abner Louima was sodomized by the New York City Police Department. What they did is they arrested him, beat him up, they took him to the station, and literally scores of police knew this. They took him in the bathroom, and they rammed it was at the police station. But in any case, whatever. The point is that they got him, and they rammed a toilet plunger up his rectum. He was taken to the hospital with serious internal injuries. And literally, nobody in the medical community was willing to report this except for one nurse. She has literally put her job on the line. She has been attacked by other medical professionals, literally physically attacked. People have told her, why bring this out? Why say anything about this? Why bring this out to the light of day? Because after all, your job is on the line. For reporters, for medical professionals, for all these professional people, for teachers, I mean, did you guys, like, see what went on at the high school? These teachers' jobs are on the line. If the teachers say, yeah, this is some bullshit, you students ought to go out there and join this,
their jobs are on the line. And this is the battlefield that we're fighting. A key battlefield is in the realm of public opinion, and precisely with a question of getting the news out, both within the established press and within the alternate press, and most certainly a lot of students who are planning on taking this kind of work up need to use this, because there is a question of what you yourself can do. This is a very, very crucial battlefield, literally across the country, and most certainly in Mumia's case.
And that was David Dumar, before that Becky Johnson. And now on the line, I hope we're going to have Jim Costner talking about the demonstration. Jim, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz calling in. Have you got time to talk? While Jim's doing that, Jim was one of the main organizers of that demonstration on Friday. It's at his house that the Santa Cruzans, for full disclosure, will be meeting tomorrow night at 7, for those of you who want to come down to 263 Water Street and join us. And, now we...
Hi, Jim. Hello. Hello, Free Radio. Hello, listeners. Hello, Robert. How y'all doing?
Well, listen, I want to thank you for the wonderful turnout that you and others were able to organize on Friday. I mean, I say that a little bit schmoozy-like, but it was really impressive. You had scores of people involved in that demonstration who I had never seen involved in any other demonstration, and it's really important that such folks felt strongly enough through the information that you were able to get out to them to march all the way down from the university downtown. You want to talk about the demonstration?
Well, first of all, I'd like to challenge a couple things, is that I'm not responsible for that demonstration, and the people themselves made that demonstration.
All right.
In regards to the demonstration, yeah, I would like to talk about it. I wanted to say thank you, Robert, for letting me have a chance to have a voice and just say hello to people out there. The demonstration was good and strong. There was a lot of youth involved. There were students from UCSC that were involved. Probably about 40 students came along, maybe even 50. They decided not to go to classes that day and marched in unity around freeing Mumia and around freeing Leonard Peltier and political prisoners, and in unity around abolition of the death penalty, also against police brutality, the huge epidemic that's growing and escalating nationwide, where over 4,000 people have been killed by the cops since 1994, and another brother, Happy John Dine, in Santa Cruz, was off a week ago Wednesday at 6:45 p.m. downtown, and it was also in support of him, and that's, as you know, Robert, that's where the demonstration actually ended up and concluded, was at the place of where Officer Connor Carey had killed our brother, back that day.
Right, that was at Front and Soquel Street in front of a Coast Federal Bank.
That's correct.
Yeah, in fact, there was a vigil there for several evenings, and...
I heard I was out of town, unfortunately, but I heard that they were very good and strong, and I'm glad that the community responds to such nasty brutalities, because it could have been any one of us, and we all need to put down everything aside that causes us not to go to unite and find all the ways we can to come together around these issues for all our survival, for all our freedom, and for all our rights.
Well, you were on the mall several days ago flyering for this rally, putting up Free Mumia posters, and something interesting happened to you. We've talked about that.
I wouldn't really call it interesting, to be honest.
Well, let me put it this way.
No offense, something, Robert.
Yes, you had a contact with the police department yourself.
I'd say the police department contacted me on the head.
What happened? Tell us about it. This was on Thursday?
This was on Thursday evening. Actually not too evening. It was more like late afternoon, probably around 4, something like that. There was quite a few folks around. There was conversations as usual. People were discussing the Happy John Dine's murder, to be honest. That was part of what was going on there. I was walking by.
Where was this?
This is right there by, on the corner of, what's the street?
Across from Woolworths?
What's the Irish pub that right there? Across from Woolworths? Rosie McCann's?
Yes,
It's right down below Rosie McCann's. Mm-hmm. There
That enclosed, there's a sort of a walkway now where they're putting in a new building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was walking by, and they just had engaged in some conversation with some of the people, and then I was putting a Mumia poster up on the that wooden fence right alongside the property. It's called Red Tree Properties.
Mm-hmm.
Right along the fence where they're doing construction, they're right adjacent, right to the right of Rosie McCann's, right to the right of and below. and I put a Mumia poster up, popped up the staple gun. I mean, they're probably going to shoot me because, like, Happy John Dine, that's crazy. They can shoot you for this plastic gun, but they can shoot you for a staple gun. Mm-hmm. Anyways, a little extra commentary. I put the Mumia poster up, put the staples in it, turned around, an officer on a bicycle had stopped immediately and was really, like, kind of, like, paranoid and kind of already came with a whole bunch of fear to begin with.
What did he say?
He got it right in my face, and he said, "You're in violation of law. What is your name?" I told him, "I'm not in violation of any law, and I'm not going to give him my name."
This is Officer Northrup?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And he just kept repeating, "You need to give me your name." And I said, "No, I'm not." Next thing you know, there's five cops. He calls in for backup, and there's people gathering around, only like maybe six or seven, eight, you know, people, and there's five cops.
Now, why wouldn't you identify yourself?
Because I believe that according to the law, and I feel that it's my human right to walk along anywhere in America I choose, as long as I'm not in people's personal property and personal homes, I can walk. And if I choose to exercise my First Amendment by putting up free Mumia posters or free the homeless or liberate the land or stop relocation of grandma or whatever the hell I want to express, except for things that are totally violent and evil and wicked, then I have a right to do so. And therefore, I don't have to give my name to anyone who professes to be of the law, because they don't understand the actual law. They have no understanding of the real laws of this world, of this universe. They're removed.
So you didn't recognize his authority?
I don't recognize his authority. I don't recognize his law. I don't recognize who he is. I don't recognize his right to interfere or to throw me on the ground or to pummel or to brutalize or to shoot at any one of us in the community.
Well, now let's step back here and say what happened then. You said, "I don't want to tell you who I am because I'm not breaking the law."
I'm not breaking the law. Yeah, therefore I don't have to tell you who I am. And then the next thing you know, the sergeant comes up, a red-haired
Sergeant McMahon.
Sergeant McMahon comes up and says to me, "You have to give the name, or we're going to book you." So as I'm deliberating on whether I want to speak at the Mumia rally that night or whether I'm willing to go to jail right then. As I'm deliberating that, before I get to finish deliberating, the two officers, she says, "Book them." Two officers grab me by the hands and start jerking my arms behind my back, in which case I...
Now, before you say anything here, be advised that since you may be going to trial, what I want to ask you is, what were you charged with after this? I
was charged with resisting arrest, and I was charged with two violations of municipal codes.
Uh-huh.
And they told me last time that this next time I suppose they're in violation of some law, I will have to do some time.
Did you strike either of the officers?
I didn't strike any of the officers, nor do I pose any violent threat to anybody in this
Were
community.
You violent toward the officers?
I was not violent toward the officers whatsoever.
Did you allow yourself to be handcuffed?
I allowed myself, actually, you know what? They just grabbed me, took my arms and threw me on the ground and put my head into the asphalt, put their knee in the back of my neck, knee in my back, and then said that I resisted arrest.
But they didn't do this in response to something you did, like refuse to go with them?
No, I didn't refuse to go with them. How am I going to go refuse? I have no gun. They have, 9 millimeters and sticks. How am I going to refuse to go with them?
I see. So, in essence, you were being arrested. And, of course, the crime that they were arresting you for was posting a Mumia poster on a private property. But did they have a complaint from the private property owner?
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
Did they have a complaint from the private property owner, Red Tree Properties?
No, Red Tree Properties did not complain. There was no complaint. The officer just rolled up and saw me put up a poster and immediately started harassing me because he saw me put up a Mumia poster. And they even told me during the interaction that they knew who I was. If they know who I was, why are they asking me for my name? They told me they knew who I was. They say he's on the list, whatever the list is.
And they said, who used that phrase?
Northrop. No, the sergeant, excuse me, Sergeant McMahon.
Sergeant McMahon said he's on the list?
Something to that effect. We have him on a list in downtown or downtown.
Did she say that to you on the scene or later?
On the scene.
And did anyone, were there other witnesses to this?
There was people around there, I imagine. I think it was videotaped. I don't know if every word was captured or if everybody saw what all the things that went down. I don't think I saw everything that went down.
You know that a week before, the same Sergeant McMahon issued a citation to a woman named Sanda, who was going to be on our show today, but couldn't. She was actually going to be on our show last week, too, but she was out at a demonstration for Leonard Peltier in San Francisco last week.
Yeah, that was powerful.
Right, I hear it was a good demonstration. But Sergeant McMahon, in any case, also issued a ticket at that demonstration for people confiscating all their cardboard signs, or many of them, and... telling this UCSC student that she was in violation of a sign ordinance, which I think I went into this at the last phone call.
Yeah, that seems to be standard operating procedure now amongst the fascists in our community who are trying to stop us from promoting education and unity and movement.
Well, if by fascists you mean police officers who are substituting their own judgment and their own preferences for the law, then I might well agree with you on that.
I mean fascism by the sense that the law in this country is to keep everybody down, homeless, beaten up, shot at, brutalized, incarcerated, addicted, so on and so forth. Therefore, under that condition, when the police, who are supposed to protect and serve the people, are actually enforcing the genocidal maniacs' laws to keep us all down, therefore I consider them to be fascists. I do not consider them to uphold any laws that have anything to do with justice whatsoever.
Well, you're a man of passionate views and a man who mentally, he puts his posters where his mouth is, so to speak. You know, you're out there on the streets doing what other people
will
begin to do, which is to raise voices around issues that are important to them.
Before we all end up dead. I hope people wake up before we end up dead and incarcerated.
Well, regarding getting back to death again, I guess we have one man dead in the community, and that whole issue has now been declared closed by the district attorney. At least I think that was the indication of the headlines in the paper. While I was off air, Vinny, the man who originally broke the story for Free Radio Santa Cruz, called.
Right on, Vinny.
Yeah, right on, Vinny.
Right on, Vinny. Keep up the voice.
He called me and asked me to check again the Sentinel story, which I did. I now have a copy of that Sentinel story from Saturday's paper.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an interesting point in that story, which says that first it says that the patrol car's lights were focused on Dine as Carrie and Over got out of the car. And then at the end it says, Danner said, however, that some of the witnesses did not see the weapon because of their vantage point and because of the lighting conditions at the time.
There's a light that's right by that corner.
And there was either a spotlight or police car headlights on the man who they shot down, or who Officer Carey shot down. So you can't have it all ways at the same time, unless you're trying simply to iron everything out to make it a consistent story with the story that you want the public to believe.
Well, it's obviously very clear that Happy had no weapons, no posing threat. Very clear, according to the witnesses, and even according to their own testimony, that he even a toy gun, for God's sakes, doesn't hurt anybody. And there's children who have toy guns throughout the whole community. So would they justify the killing of a child with a toy gun? Would they kill a father?
Well, if a man had been standing, if they didn't know, they claimed to receive a report of a man menacing other people, and then they arrived on the scene and they saw what appeared to be a gun in his hand, and if it was pointed at them in a menacing way, and they didn't know the person, and they didn't know he had a history of using these toy guns, and he was essentially a friendly guy. If they didn't know this, then that might be a justification, or it would be a justification.
According to at least six eyewitnesses,
but they
there was
did
no
know
toy
that.
Gun in the man's hand. According to at least six eyewitnesses, Art Danner lied publicly on Channel 8 TV by saying there was 30 witnesses. There wasn't 30 witnesses on the whole scene. Nobody has 30 witnesses. Nobody. The prosecution or the defense, no one. So therefore, he is a liar. And according to many of us, or many people in this community who put forth the Art Danner, the Recall Art Danner campaign, they put forth leaflets that talk about the many lies that this so-called DA, this so-called leader in this community, is involved in and what he's about. He's a known criminal. He's a known thug. And his friends, like Steve Police Chief Belcher, is a known thug who justify murder of people in the community. Happy John was one of the most peaceful individuals in Santa Cruz. If you can justify the murder of the most peaceful, what are they going to justify next? Them just starting to off homeless people?
Apparently they're justifying it.
The first thing that they told Happy John Dine was, get down the street, bum, right there. That's a violation of his rights, right there. And the middle-class people in this community are sleepy and mindless and will justify that stuff. And the merchants are behind that stuff, and the capitalists is behind it, and the cops enforce it. And the fact that we sit around it like fools and let it happen is most intolerable, most disgusting to ourselves as human beings.
So that's one of the reasons that you've volunteered to have meetings of the Santa Cruzans for full disclosure at your house?
Well, they can come. Anybody who's interested about this case, anybody who wants to see justice, anybody who wants to see Officer Connor Carey removed from the force, removed, have the gun removed from him, at the very least, and brought up on criminal charges, many people feel in this community, that those kind of realities we will be organizing, and we are building resistance around and momentum around these issues. And the whole issue of question of police brutality is being challenged not only by Santa Cruz citizens, but by people throughout the whole country. The whole escalation of the movement nationwide around police brutality is on the rise, and people need to be part of that and get involved in that, because it means all of our lives.
Let me clarify that my own position on this is specifically that I want there to be full disclosure of the facts in this case. I'm not making any statements about whether Officer Carey murdered Happy John.
Of course not. Because I
wasn't there. I didn't see it. But the witness's testimony leads me to believe that there are significant discrepancies in what appears to be a cover-up in the district attorney's office and the police department on this issue.
The fact that we're in America and police brutality is such an epidemic and genocide is the name of this country, and the fact that happy people get blown up by two officers who were on the scene and homie didn't have no gun, no weapon, was not in violation of any law. There were six witnesses who were willing to come publicly and testify with similar stories who were at different vantage points who didn't know each other before the scene. How much more facts and evidence do you need to know before you can call something murder? Murder. If I did it, you know damn well I'd be up on death row or I'd be locked down for the rest of my life. I would be gone. I'd be removed from the whole scene. Even if I did it in self-defense. If I did it in self-defense, they'd still put my ass down for eternity.
Well, that's what I said the other week about Council Member Hernandez. That if I'd gone around tearing down signs like he did, I would be behind bars big time. But he continues to maintain a respected position as a city council member.
Because he's a so-called progressive on a council of non-leaders who basically uphold the status quo that's really about oppressing everybody and anything.
Well, the city council will be meeting on Tuesday. The Santa Cruzans, for full disclosure, will be meeting on Monday at 7 at your house at 263 Water Street. Should they give you a call if they want to help in this effort, Jim? Or?
Definitely. 420-0853
to help out with Santa Cruzans for full disclosure. And I guess you're assisting a tabling effort. I guess some folks around your house are trying to get folks out on the mall.
I wouldn't say around my house, and be careful of the way you communicate on the public radio, please.
Right. How would you clarify
that? There are activists in the community who are interested in uniting around getting the word out about this reality. Mm-hmm. There are other activists who want to investigate, who are further and more thoroughly investigating the crime scene itself and who was really involved in what and what really went down to the best clarity as possible before we really go out in a huge and powerful way, which is what we're gaining momentum to do. We're asking people to come and get involved in the investigation process. We're asking people to come and get involved in the tabling and the education process. And we're asking for people to come, and we're asking for the witnesses to come out more publicly. But if you want support and backing, because this is a nasty police state, then to please also contact me, and we'll find you more support. We can't promise or guarantee anything, but we can help, and we will support. And we are very sincerely interested in seeing that justice is done in this case.
And your number again is
420-0853.
420-0853. And tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at 263 Water Street, come to this meeting at Santa Cruzans for
full disclosure.
Full disclosure. I can never remember it, and I'm glad somebody does.
All right.
Thank you, Jim Costner.
Thank you very much. Take care, everybody. Long live Free Radio.
Thank you.
Free Mumia.
And you are indeed listening to Free Radio at 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, your Sunday noontime civil rights show. Happens every Sunday at 11 to 1:30 and comes on again on Thursday at 6 o'clock in the evening for 2 hours. If you want to join our show, our call-in number is 423-5361. Perhaps you think that all this is a tempest in a teapot. Perhaps you think that this is something that we should leave for the police and the district attorney to resolve. Perhaps you think the Sentinel has the true story on this issue, but there is no story, really. It's simply a simple, man gets shot by police for a waving apparent weapon at them. Let us know.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, okay, this is Al.
Hi, Al.
Can I say a few things?
Please do.
Okay, first of all, I want to say something about the article by Robert Gammon.
In the Saturday paper?
Yes, it says Danner clears, officer, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you read it really fast, he says that his office interviewed more than 30 witnesses in the last 9 days, okay?
Yeah, the last caller just pointed out, have you been listening to our show?
A little bit, but can I go on?
Sure, well, the last caller pointed out that there weren't 30 witnesses on the scene, but go ahead.
Well, but then it goes on and says at the end that only a few corroborated with Carey's and Over's stories. So they do not have 30 witnesses, contesting to one set of facts. But when you read it really fast, you see what I mean? It sounds like, oh, they got overwhelming
odds. I got that point. What's your next point?
Okay, the next point is that there is a fairly new weapon available to the police department. And I could be off by, time-wise a little bit, but these are facts, okay? What it is, in effect, is a ballistic beanbag that is fired, and it's non-lethal, but it will definitely knock anybody down. Mm-hmm. All right, and I know they have it. It could have been used, mm-hmm. and specifically in a situation where somebody hasn't really shot anyone yet, or discharged a firearm, or
I encourage you to take this particular recommendation to the Citizens Police Review Board and write them a brief note saying I make a complaint about this issue and demand that that the board issue a policy statement recommending in the future use of this other weapon.
Yes, especially in non. Yeah, see there again the technical terms kind of.
Right, no problem. What's your next point?
That's probably pretty much it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Al.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Bye bye.
And phone lines are hopping and jumping, and we're soon going to play a little something from San Francisco as well. So we will kind of balance out the show with this and that. Let's see what you have to say out there.
Hi, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Fuck shit, bitch.
Not sure who that was, but the message was pretty clear. The story in the Register Pajaronian, I promised to read it to you. I'm going to read it to you now very briefly and very quickly. I don't even know if I want to bother with this. People out there want to hear this story. I give a call and I'll do it. But I think that for the moment I'm going to pass on to other matters since we've been harping on this one, and hope we will continue to harp on it, but we kind of know the issues here, those of us who have been calling in and following the story. I want you to remember the last time this show was on, we had a long interview with a man named John Malkin. John is a community member who is on the Citizens Police Review Board. He was shortly appointed after the board was formed in 1995, but he also was a part of the group that got the board together, that agitated and petitioned and lobbied and finally were able, with other groups, to get the city council to vote for a fangless but so-called Citizens Police Review Board. And the reason I call the board fangless is because it has no powers of independent investigation, has never sought such powers. It could actually go to city council and try to get an independent investigator funded. It does not hold public hearings, although it could, but it's never made that attempt. It has no power to discipline police officers, and it has pretty much succumbed almost at every turn of the road to police department pressure on significant issues, like when the police chief violated his own directive C-7 in the summer of 1995, in which he was not forwarding some complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board, only 7 complaints of an average of about 35 about that time of year had been received in the past. It suddenly showed that only 7 complaints had been given that year. Why? The police department was burying the complaints, calling them inquiries, in violation of its own directive and in violation of the laws that had created the Citizens Police Review Board. What was the response of the CPRB? To dilly, dither, and dally for about a year and a half, during which time the police chief simply changed his own directive to state that the policies that he was following, not forwarding the complaints, calling some of them inquiries, was a legitimate policy, was the new policy, and that they were going to act as though it were the old policy as well. And that was just fine with the Citizens Police Review Board. The CPRB had no problem when the independent counsel, so-called independent attorney counsel appointed for them, was a lawyer who represented police officers at the county level. Hard to believe. The Citizens Police Review Board had nothing to say other than sucking its thumb and stamping its feet and just sort of looking the other way and wringing its hands when John Malkin, one of its most powerful members, was essentially undercut by Police Chief Belcher in his attempt to do outreach in the Beach Flats. Belcher criticized the CPRB, trying to take away from the credibility of what Malkin was doing you heard Malkin describe that last show. What he described was that the chief was responding to things that Malkin had not said. Malkin was simply telling people that they could file complaints in the following manner, and here's how you do it. And he was saying that, and the police chief was saying the police are good. You know, in essence, we don't have bad police officers, so forth and so on, indicating to Malcolm that they were trying to undercut the authority. When Malcolm criticized that, he was criticized directly by a letter to Councilmember Mike Rotkin from Eric Larson. And Mr. Larson, who's a part of the Kennedy group at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, who helped also elect Councilmember Hernandez, one of the weakest, most pro-police members of the Citizens Police Review Board before he was a council member, Hernandez. We have a situation where there was a very weak board where Malcolm was not supported by the majority of the board, and so eventually he resigned for that reason and for other reasons. He said he'd actually planned to resign beforehand. We have a call coming in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Seems like somebody doesn't like what we're saying. Well, there's nothing new to that. But call in if you want. If you've got something to say, wish to make threats or harass on air, hey, why don't you just say who you are? It might be more appropriate to do that. Anyway, there was a more recent resignation from the Citizens Police Review Board. That was Gia Grant. Gia Grant wrote a letter of resignation. She was the appointee of Councilmember Celia Scott. The way the system works is each council member appoints a board member. And she wrote this letter to Celia Scott on October 28th as to why she was resigning from the CPRB. Dear Celia Scott, as I informed you on October 21st, I am resigning from the CPRB. Although I support the concept of civilian oversight of police activities, I have not found the work of the Santa Cruz CPRB to be effective. The structure of the board does not allow it to answer to the communities that need it most, i.e. the low-income and homeless. The current structure of the CPRB continues to allow the police to essentially police themselves. The board exists merely to make symbolic recommendations which, when different from police department, are rarely agreed upon by the chief. This process creates little police accountability. In order to become more effective, the CPRB needs to be empowered to participate in all aspects of the complaint process, including investigations, as well as have the power to make its own recommendations on police policy. Without structural change, the CPRB will continue to be viewed by the community as futile. As well, I am resigning because my work on the board and in the beach flats has been seriously hindered by the hostility directed at me by the police department. My 4 years of community work with at-risk, low-income residents that has been supported and recognized by the Santa Cruz City Council, Parks and Rec Department, University of California Santa Cruz, and many other organizations remains a higher priority for me. It is an unfortunate loss to the community that these two positions are not compatible. In the future, I can only hope that the CPRB will develop a stronger, more community-oriented system that will guarantee a high level of police accountability in Santa Cruz. Sincerely, Gia Nicole Grant. Well, we've seen what the CPRB has done recently. The chief of the CPRB, the head of it, Bill Christie, has declared he's not going to hold an emergency meeting. He's not going to have any meeting until the regular meeting in December, at which point they will perhaps look over the investigation. I mean, they'll have to respond to my complaint, unless they dismiss it out of hand, which was that Officer Carey used excessive force. Officer Over was guilty of not responding to, not recognizing and identifying the victim, Happy John, and that Police Chief Belcher essentially conducted a cover-up 16 hours later, by the which I mean he disregarded various witnesses' statements and came up with a statement that essentially exonerated him, a political statement, and exonerated Officer Carey, that whitewashed the department without going to the real truth of the situation, which was, for most witnesses, that Happy John apparently, if he had that weapon with him, which he apparently did, he was not brandishing it. He did not have anything in his hands. He was not pointing. If he had something in his hands, he wasn't pointing it at police. And he certainly wasn't in a combat stance. Even the district attorney now, confronted with the autopsy, has suddenly shifted around on that particular issue. But the Bill Christie, the Citizens Police Review Board head, has refused to call a meeting. He's refused to... He said he wants to wait for the police report to come in, and then, of course, they have no way of investigating. They have no procedure for investigating independently anyway. And it's not clear that they're even going to ask City Council for an independent investigator. So if anyone is going to do that, it has to be us. It has to be the public. And the public can do that by calling the City Council at 429-3550, 429-3550, and you can do it on weekends. There's a 24-hour line, 429, take down that number, 3550. And if you want to call in here, the number here is 423-5361. If you want to talk about the issues that we're raising, if you don't think we're raising the right issues, or if you have a critical point of view on that, your comments are still welcome. We want to know what you have to say. And I think the public needs to hear this kind of a dialogue, because it's, all it's getting is essentially a monologue from the police department, the district attorney's office, and the media. I ran into my teacher just the other day. Hadn't met since high school, so we had a lot to say. And the first thing that he asked me, after shaking both my hands, was, are you doing something with your life, or just playing in rock and roll bands? I said, there's so many things I could do, I don't know how to begin to tell you. So many choices, I hear voices tell me about a new career. I can make a new one every other year. I could design a billboard sign for filter cigarettes. I spend my days thinking up new ways of collecting overdue debts. I could design skyscrapers, fill them up with piles of papers, high above the petrol vapors. I could design army tanks, but as they say in the USA, no thanks. I could teach psychology as a way to earn a buck, although I suppose I'd do more good driving a semi-truck. I could teach auto mechanics, but it's such a panic, and who needs more cars? We'd be better off with more bars, but not much. So I say, like Dutch, name the dollar. I could be an editor or a short-term loan creditor and learn how to lie all the time. I could become a cop and learn how to stop everything people do except crime.